Welcome to the Final Draft Podcast. My name's Andrew Bopel, and today I'm joined on the podcast by Yumna Kassab. The Final Draft Podcast explores books, writing, and literary culture. Every week, Final Draft broadcasts from the studios of 2SER in Sydney. And at Final Draft, we are dedicated to exploring Australian writing, from debut authors to the classics you know and love. These conversations look at the issues that drive the author's storytelling and help you discover more from the books you love, because these are the stories that make us who we are. 2SER broadcasts from the lands of the Gadigal people, and I record on the lands of the Darug and the Gunungurra people. I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of those lands and pay my respects to their ongoing connection to their lands, acknowledging they are unceded lands and treaty has never been made with Australia's First Nations. Yumna Kassab is joining me on the show today. If you're a regular listener, you have met Yumna before when we discussed her novel Australiana. She is renowned, really well respected, nominated for prizes, and just a fantastic writer. I really love sharing these conversations. And Politica, her latest novel, transports the reader to a conflict engulfing a country, and through woven perspectives, we are taken into that landscape to consider not just the conflict, the violence, but the impact, the human cost of war. It's going to be a really terrific conversation. I hope you'll join me for it, because Yumna has a real way of evoking these issues. So join me today on the show for Yumna Kassab's Politica. It is my great pleasure to be welcoming back to the show Yumna Kassab. Yumna is the author of novels including Australiana and The Lovers. Her writing has been listed for prizes including the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards, the Queensland Literary Awards, the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards, and the Stella Prize. Like, these are some of the big ones, people. Yumna is also Parramatta's first laureate in literature, and it is such a great pleasure to be welcoming her. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Thank you.
Your new book is called Politica, and through Politica, the reader is transported to a conflict engulfing a country, and in glimpses of ordinary life and revolutionary struggle, we're shown the cost of war on a people and the tenacity and the fierceness of will required to carry on. Now, the opening line, this feels a good place to start, the opening line. The opening line of Politica is, "What did school matter when there was a war going on?" And your character, Jamal, I mean, he's not the first child to stare out at the world and wonder why they're wasting their time in school. But from the outset, you also establish for the reader this tension of how life feels in war. So I wondered if we could begin talking about this tension that you establish between Jamal and his father, between the romance of fighting and the reality of war.
Yeah, so in terms of Politica, it does have five sections, and I did play around a lot in terms of what order those five sections were going to be. If a person really wanted to, they could probably read it, you know, the last section first. You know, they could really play around with the differences, like have, you know, sort of different arrangements in terms of the reading, and I think the book would still work. But in terms of the actual arrangement for the book, one of the things that I had in my head was, rather than actually looking at something chronologically, I did want to actually start with, well, the start of the war and then bring it up to the sort of aftermath and the present day. And to an extent, you know, there was a sort of big inspiration from Lebanon's civil war, which started in the 70s. And even though officially the fighting did end, the official fighting ended, you know, the end of the 80s or, you know, 1990, that, you know, there is this sort of long aftermath. And so I suppose the whole book itself is about how politics and war and conflict, revolution, et cetera, actually affects people's lives. And it just made sense to actually start with Jamal sitting in class thinking about, well, you know, there's a war going on out there, and meanwhile I'm sitting in class. Like, that's, you know, it made sense to me to actually start the story there.
You've referenced there some of the inspiration, but within the book, I mean, the conflict that engulfs the lives of the people in Politica, it remains anonymous. Were you trying there to dislocate the narrative from a specific history?
Yeah, of course. You know, I think especially with Lebanon itself, I really wanted to avoid obvious markers, you know, religious markers, cultural markers, whatever it is, you know, for very obvious reasons that, you know, the peace that we have is actually quite tense. And if we also look at the region as well, you know, that's also a very major factor. But then there's this other major idea that was sort of at the back of my mind. I've had an interest in Latin America for quite some time. And one of the things that sort of stands out to me, and there's a sort of parallel with the Arab world or, you know, probably other regions of the world, is that, you know, sometimes when we become very bound by, you know, the borders or the borders that we now have, that we start to actually, we stop being able to look at how things sit together as a whole, that we become very obsessed about, say, one country's history, and then we start to actually miss the broader trends. And I think that if I'm considering the history of, you know, many Arab countries, or also even in terms of Latin America, that they obviously have, you know, shared histories, and it seems a bit silly to just define a story based on a border that probably has been there for about 70 or 80 years.
It opened up the book so much for me, but of course, like, I'm this white Aussie guy. I've lived in a country that hasn't experienced conflict, or, I mean, you know, two politicians duking it out on the news hardly qualifies. It read really interestingly, and it opened up my ideas to think more broadly. I'm wondering, have other readers kind of offered you perspectives because you have almost given them this blank slate to read into?
Yeah, I think so. I think some people, you know, probably would prefer greater specificity. But I think there is a sort of power to stories such as fables and fairy tales, where if you strip things right back, if we, you know, get away from obvious markers in terms of, you know, place names and, you know, politicians and dates and so on, that we can actually start to look at things at a very sort of structural level. And hopefully the book itself gets to the reality of conflict without, you know, blaming particular sides and things like that. That was definitely something I really wanted to avoid.
I think a power of the book to get into that structural side of things is the way you tell the story, the way you present characters. Now, when we first met, we were discussing your novel Australiana, and I asked you about the ways that you weave voices together to build up narrative across time, across space and perspectives. I found this similar style of voice and perspective woven together, building up impressions of the war, the impact on the people. And I basically want to ask you the same question. I want to ask you again to reflect on how your writing style shapes the storytelling and how the story, I guess, blossoms out.
Yeah, I think now that I'm sort of four books in, and when I sort of consider maybe the way that I think and the way I relate to the world, I think what always interests me is an individual, but within the context of a community. It's there in the House of Yusuf, it's there in Australiana, it's there in The Lovers, even though it's the story of, you know, a pair of lovers, and then it's also there in Politica. And I think that especially in maybe English-speaking countries, we've become quite obsessed with a sort of single narrative where, you know, it typically is following one character and then, you know, it's neatly resolved. And I don't think necessarily that has much to do with life. And if we're actually trying to tell the story of a community, well, it requires a slightly more flexible structure. And in some ways, what I am probably doing with my books is taking almost a sort of aerial view and then looking at connections between things. And I think it may be just the way I actually think about the world, because often when I'm also teaching, it takes me, you know, it's a sort of conscious effort to try and put things into a sort of linear, you know, style of thinking, while what is very natural to me is to think about, yeah, how things actually connect. That's actually what interests me in terms of if I'm learning about a new subject, just to see how all the different pieces actually sit together.
It's a tremendous way to build up impressions and then build up understanding and to really get involved in the story. I mean, it strikes me the contrast you made there was with stories that might have a single or perhaps a dual narrative perspective. And I wonder then, appreciating that there is, you know, so much incredible writing out there, it's probably also a bunch of terrible writing, but we can, it's become so easy to silo yourself, and I read this type of story, and I wonder if a single perspective invites that. Well, I'm going to read stories about people like this, and in Politica, we have people like this and people like that, and it invites you to try and understand more broadly.
Yeah, of course. And but it's also the same in Australiana, which is, you know, set in a rural Australian location, that, yeah, when we actually, you know, I called Australiana an ecosystem because it was, again, looking at a community. But that's also a very interesting way of considering the world. And I think we've kind of, I really love, you know, individuality and all that, but I think that we've become a little bit obsessed to the point of, you know, centering always individual narratives and not looking at how communities actually interact with each other, or if we're actually considering the impact of a conflict or a revolution, I think it's quite limiting just to focus on a single perspective, or, you know, maybe even a family's perspective, that, you know, if you actually want to look broadly at things, well, it needs a sort of broader perspective.
Mm. I felt that you were also not only wanting to look at perspectives, but also how they exist across time. And I felt this blurring of a sense of time through the narrative, like this sense that time might compress or it might stretch because of the war. People, they lose a sense of it passing. It was really brought home for me in Salma's story in Rolling Down the Hill. So at the very end of Salma's story, where we've learned of Salma's struggles, her love lost and found. And yet in Rolling Down the Hill, we find this sense that for Salma, all time and no time has passed as she kind of revisits this site of childhood adventures. How did you see time operating for you and the characters in the stories?
Yeah, I think the Salma section, 1973, is quite an interesting one, because I was writing that in 2021 during lockdowns. And one of the things was at the back of my mind was, you know, we've got these lockdowns and these, you know, and the pandemic is, you know, sort of happening, and there is going to be a sense for every single human being on the planet that we used to live this way and now we live in this other way, that there's a complete change. Even when we think about people working from home, well, actually 4 years ago, we actually did not do this, and now it's just completely part of our norm. And because I really did not want to write about the pandemic, I was actually trying to think of a sort of historical parallel where, you know, things used to work in this way and now they no longer work in this way. And how time, I find that when I'm actually considering time, if you're a student, you know, you have these, okay, I'm in year seven, I'm in year eight, I'm in year nine. But once you're an adult and you're out into the world, that time really does start to blur. And unless there are some very obvious things that actually stand out 1 year compared to the next, well, time does actually take on a very strange quality. And also, in times of great stress, that things, memory does become quite vague, that it's hard to pin certain details down to, for example, specific dates or specific months.
Mm. Is that compounded also in the book through that sense of the conflict? Whilst there are probably very big things happening, I got the sense that as it wears on, it takes on this aura of having always been this way.
Yes, and I think if I'm to talk about, say, Lebanon Civil War, but I think, you know, every country also has this sense that when you're in the middle of, or you're in the midst of something like a conflict or a revolution or whatever it is, that it is actually very hard to see to the end of it. And I think there's this sort of, again, with Lebanon, there's this sort of false narrative that the civil war actually ended in 1990. The truth is that it's almost like that that song by the Cranberries, Zombie, where, yeah, you know, they're still fighting, like in your head, they're still fighting or something like that. Mm. Where, you know, also in Lebanon's history, well, it's no, we didn't actually go back to a great, you know, peaceful situation. There was the port explosion of 2020. The situation in the country at the moment is actually quite terrible. So in some ways, this thing has actually not ended. And I was also very, very interested in the history of Chile and also the sort of the legacy of, you know, the dictator Pinochet, and how, again, you know, it also has a very long legacy. And I think it's the same with many countries in the world, that we like to mark these clear boundaries. The thing started here, the thing ended here, there, but that's actually not very, very true.
I wonder then, because I wanted to talk a little bit about the section of the book Politica, which does deal with sort of generations moving through. It's the title of the book. It's the title of this section. And in that section of the book, you tell of a family of I'll call them freedom fighters, revolutionaries, through the story of Abdullah, Khadija, Yasmin, and Bilal. We see these generations kind of, they play out their roles, and it all feels very elevated and important. But there's also, I felt like, this big question mark over this idea of the politics of the movement. Did you want to complicate that sense that a cause is all-encompassing and that it is a thing that's, you know, absolutely worth sacrificing for?
It's a very tricky question. That's a very tough question. I'm not sure actually even how to address that question. I do think that sometimes if we're talking about generations in a sort of fight for justice, let's say, for example, if we look at you know, maybe feminism, or we're talking about, you know, climate change or something like that, that these things are actually waves, and it's actually, you know, it's not, again, that we arrive at this point where everything is free and fantastic and everyone's living a great life. It's almost like these things, there's a sort of a wave, a lull, a wave and a lull. And I suppose it makes sense to have that in the context of a family where, you know, there's one generation of a cause and the next generation of a cause and then the third generation of a cause. Maybe that's where the sort of, you know, parallel comes in. But none of it was deliberate, actually.
Even just seeing Khadija's role was really fascinating, because she seemed to be looking and doubting. But to look at Abdullah and Yasmin, who seem parallel, Yasmin very much seems like she is cast in that revolutionary mold as a leader. But of course, Abdullah had to come to his beliefs, and Yasmin has almost inherited them. They're sort of the air that she's grown up breathing, which, as much as they may look alike, must make them startlingly different to each other. Enjoying the,
yeah, of course.
And sorry.
Pardon? Say that again.
Could you hear the cockatoos just then?
No. I heard no cockatoos at all.
They were screaming in my ear. Sorry.
Sorry, what was your question?
It was probably comment more than question, but just thinking about the way, as similar as Abdullah and Yasmin would be in, I guess, the presentation of their beliefs, their presentation as leaders, Abdullah had to come to his beliefs through, I guess, the building up of the movement. But for Yasmin, she inherited them. It's the air that she breathes. And I guess there was a sense of inevitability for her. And then again, we can come to Bilal. And there, I felt like you left that section with a question mark over, well, what does his future entail?
Exactly. Yeah, no, it is very interesting. I think that Abdullah actually starts off with a great deal of, you know, he's quite idealistic, but I think he also does mention in that Politica section that it's very likely that this whole cause and this revolution and whatever is going to end in defeat. And I think Yasmin probably comes in, you know, again, with a bit of idealism. Well, she's quite idealistic. And then, but also there's a, I don't know, maybe it's a bit fatal, actually, her joining the cause. Mm. Well, I think Khadija, who is probably a little bit more ambivalent, is probably the most realistic one. And, yeah, I think her perspective in that section is actually quite interesting. She's not exactly a central character, but she's also a very, very, very important character.
Mm. I loved, and this is probably an artifact of that sort of helicoptering view of so many different perspectives, that we come across contrast. So I want to take us now from the leadership, the cause, back to the very personal. I want to come back to Jamal and his father. Their story in the opening section, it's bookended by Jamal trying to ignore his father, and then Jamal wishing for perhaps just one more conversation. in its episodic storytelling, like, it fostered in me this wonder of the moment, how the opportunity of a few pages might bring these fresh ideas and insights. Were you looking to kind of, I guess, appreciate, to savor the everyday through the storytelling?
Really? Well, I think that when we actually focus very much on the certain scenes in life, that sometimes in retrospect, some have greater weight than others, but we don't know until, you know, many years later. And I think especially for Jamal, like, he probably does have this sense that, you know, there's this sort of conversation that remains unfinished with his father and is like, well, now it's always going to remain unfinished. And I think there are many things in life like that where, you know, maybe there was an opportunity to say something or do something and you didn't. And it's not exactly regret, but it's just something that is sort of unfinished. And in some ways we can also say that with a conflict, a war, a revolution, whatever it is, that, you know, to actually say, oh, okay, it exactly started here and it exactly finished there is, I think, quite false, that, you know, these sort of arbitrary sort of markers that we impose to kind of make the whole thing a lot neater. And I wouldn't say it was a goal, but one of the things that was very important to me with Politica is that I'm quite tired of people talking about battles or talking about history and just focusing on, okay, on this date, this is actually what happened, and then on this date, you know, something like that, or this many people died on this particular day.
That's someone ran actually up that hill and planted a flag.
Exactly. Like, it's, you know, these are sort of, okay, we're, you know, adding a lot of significance to these very obvious kind of markers, but the reality, or where I think things are quite important, is to actually look at individuals. And this is why there aren't too many dates, there aren't too many obvious causes or leaders or anything like that, because I wanted to actually bring it back to the everyday where, you know, if we're talking about a conflict or if we're talking about violence or whatever it is, that it's always focused on the individual. And it's not this telling of politics where, again, it's this leader entered parliament on this particular, you know, I don't think that actually really tells us much about impact on people.
Yeah. I mean, we forget, or perhaps we don't pay enough attention in the first place to the idea that, like, memory and remembrance is its own editorial process. And we can outsource that. We can hand that over to someone else to tell us what was important if we don't actively take part in that remembrance.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's also, you know, what kind of stands out, you know, two people witness the exact same thing, what's going to stand out to each person is going to be different. And I think that's probably also one of the reasons I felt it was quite important, if we're looking at, you know, a conflict and so on, that we actually have these many different, again, these many different perspectives.
Mm. Broadly, the action and the characters that we meet through Politica are quite contained in the space of the place, but there's a real resonance. I got this sense of what is happening to them forward through the years and out into the world. And so I thought, lastly, if we could talk about endings. And this feels like a big no-no in book discussions, but I am not about to ask you to spoil Politica so much as I am curious about the idea of an ending within this world of conflict. Like, we become, I guess it becomes this sense I got of to stay or to leave becomes something of an ending for the characters, and that the cost may be culture and identity.
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, there was someone who mentioned that in some ways Politica is a prequel to The House of Yusuf, where you've got these migrants living in Western Sydney, and then this is sort of, Politica is what actually brought them here. And I started writing Politica in 2019, around the time The House of Yusuf was about to come out. And I was actually thinking about people such as my parents, various people in the community, but they actually took a, you know, it was a major sort of risk. They didn't necessarily know the language here. They didn't have much money. That it was a massive risk. And I'm not entirely sure with the things and the advantages that I have today, that it is actually a risk that I would be willing to take or that I could actually take. So I kind of see them as like these very brave and courageous people. But in a sense, if I'm to look at the two books, Politica is almost setting up the conditions for the House of Yusuf. What is it that would actually lead people to literally cross to the other side of the world? Again, different language, different culture, different religion, different everything, to actually try and live a life there. And so when I actually think about the arrangement of the book itself, I don't think I'm ruining anything for anyone. It says it on the back cover that it does end with a scattering. But I think House of Yusuf actually starts with fragments, and then we get to two longer monologues by older members of the community. While in this, the sort of, I suppose, where people still have a choice, it's earlier in the book, and then towards the end of the book, well, the thing is actually starting to fragment and actually really fall apart. And I suppose in terms of structuring a book, or if we're talking about narratives, maybe that's not very satisfying. I think people may actually want something where it comes together and everyone's happy at the end and there isn't a scattering, but I think probably mine is a bit truer to history.
I'm recalled to comments you made at the very beginning of our conversation and a comment that we had off air that you can almost choose your own way to read Politica, but also your body of work and incorporate House of Yusuf and even the lovers in there to create a sort of a magnum opus. Always sounds like such a, you know, a bit of a funny word, but yeah, it's a bit of a, you know, it's more contemporary. You create the Yumna Kassab cinematic universe.
Exactly. It is a cinematic universe. I think Australiana is the outlier because it was in rural, like in a rural community in Australia. But I do think that House of Yusuf is the, well, sort of contemporary, and then Politica is sort of setting up House of Yusuf, and then the lovers, well, Amir from the lovers had his start in Politica. I think there's a story in there called Beneath the Shade of Memory. It's in the last section. That was the first piece ever written about Amir. So, they all start to speak to each other, I think.
Tremendous. What if listeners are discovering you for the first time, what an adventure awaits them with all of these books to discover. You know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, congratulations as well, on your role as Parramatta's first laureate in literature. What can you tell us about this role and what work might we be seeing from you through this in the future?
Yeah, so it is actually a very cool thing to have, especially for the community. I think it is a year of actually trying to figure out also how potentially long-term the laureate role could actually work. I'm pretty much the main people I sort of hang out with are, you know, the Sydney Review of Books, Western Sydney Uni, the Writing and Research Centre there, and then also Augusta Supple from the council, Parramatta City Council. But the idea is to actually have the time and space to work on a project. And the project I actually proposed was to write a dictionary. It's a creative dictionary of Parramatta. And so that dictionary is currently being written. And I think it's an interesting opportunity to actually think about, well, my life in connection with a place, but also the things that I kind of like. So it's almost, it's got memories, it's got reflections, it's also thinking about the future, it's thinking about places I sort of like, books that I think are connected to the area, just various random literary thoughts. So I do see it as a very loose dictionary, but it does center very much on Parramatta. So that is my main thing as laureate, and then there's a few workshops that I'll be running as well.
That sounds tremendous. That is something. Dictionaries are fun to read. I am unapologetic there. Read your dictionary, people. Yumna, thank you so much for the time that you've taken today. I would also be remiss. I'm remiss a lot today, but I'm making up for it. Sydney Writers Festival is coming up in May, and you've got a couple of appearances. You're going to be discussing Politica on the 22nd of May, and that's happening in Parramatta, isn't it?
Yep, that is. That's going to be at 5 within, I think, upstairs, level 4 in the library building.
Oh, fantastic. And then there is another discussion along with Shankari Chandran it's called The Presence of the Past. And, I mean, I guess you're going to be in conversation discussing your books, parallels, all the usual sort of fun Writers Festival stuff?
Yeah, so I think Shankari's next book, Safe Haven, after she won the Miles Franklin for Chai Time, this is her next book. So we're going to be discussing the sort of legacy of war and conflict and how the past is still with us. We'll be in conversation with Ashley Hay at Carriage Works.
Tremendous. That is something to look forward to. But till then, as we've already said, go and discover the Yumna Kassab cinematic universe in House of Yusuf, The Lovers, Politica. And you know what? Just throw Australiana in the shopping cart as well and complete the set.
I think so, definitely.
I really appreciate the time today.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for just being a listener of the Final Draft podcast. You make this happen. A love of books. We don't get enough time to share this, so I hold these moments precious. Thank you also to Yumna Kassab, who joined us today. Her new book is called Politica. Final Draft is recorded on the lands of the Darug and the Gunungurra people. The show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. You can stay in touch. You'll find Final Draft on socials, and you can subscribe in your podcast app. It is a way to get a new episode whenever they drop. It is also a way to support the show by helping other people find us. My name is Andrew Popel. I am going to be back with more incredible conversations with Australian writers here on Final Draft. Till then, though, happy reading. Bye for now.